Hey, everybody, we want to thank our special friends over at Sport Cafe and Catering. You can go and have lunch there at the Powers Building Atrium, or you can have them cater your very own special event. Visit at Sport Rochester. Three Heads Brewing, located on Atlantic Avenue, makes the best beer in town, available wherever fine beers are sold. And Iron Smoke Whiskey, available in two different varieties, Applewood Smoke Whiskey and Rattlesnake Rosie's Apple Pie Whiskey. IronSmokeWhiskey.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to an all-new comedy at the Carlson Cast. It's CarlsonCast.com. You kids better calm down back there. He's going to drop you off right here. It's Mr. Vinny Paulino, everybody. Check it out.
It's an inside joke.
There's a guy who got dropped off right on his head. It's Brad Ball, everybody. That's me, Ross Johnson. I'm fine. Yeah, perfectly emotionally stable. Just throwing papers around. It's great. And, of course, everybody loves. He's the sweetest guy in the whole wide world. It's Cam Taylor, everybody, with our special guest this week, Tommy Bechtold.
Oh, boy, another fabulous edition of the Comedy at the Carlson Cast for your ears.
I'm excited for this episode.
Why are you so excited about this episode?
Because you went to high school with this guy, and we're going to get stories.
No, you're not.
You fell in a hallway at least once.
Prove it.
I'm going to
prove
ask
it.
Him. I will.
Prove it.
Tommy Bechtold's going to prove it. Okay. That's who's going to prove it.
I will say that there are some dent wounds in the floor at Webster High School. But you can't prove they were me.
Some impact craters.
Some impact craters. It's the Carlson Cast. Our guest today, Tommy Bechtold. You know, not a household name yet, but he is a Rochester guy who has done some amazing things in the entertainment industry out in Los Angeles. So he is in town tonight because he's going to be part of Hate This Podcast TNT show in the Rickles Room. You ready for this? The show was at 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
The first show sold out completely.
Yes.
So they added a second show. There's a 10 o'clock show, and tickets are available for that. And in our main room this evening at 7:30, we have Orny Adams.
Yeah.
So it's exciting. He wasn't able to make it on the show this morning because of some transportation issues.
Mm.
He's stuck in Erie, Pennsylvania.
Oh, geez.
But he'll be here in time for the shows tonight. So don't
not
you
an
fear.
Outstanding place to be stuck.
Not an outstanding place to be stuck.
No.
I actually spent some time in Erie at that Junior's Comedy Club, I think is the name of it, something like that. But they had some really interesting rules. And I was talking to somebody recently that said that they changed it. They were, if you worked at this club, you had to be completely clean.
Yeah.
Like it was
I heard about
PG.
That.
PG all day long. But I've heard they've relaxed that.
Yeah. They do have a Quaker Steak and Lube, though.
And a Chick-fil-A.
How do you know that?
Because I'd get off on that exit a lot when I was used to be driving to Ohio.
Well,
all the
keep
time.
Your kicks to yourself.
Yeah.
hey, that was pretty good. Hey, you. There's a little innuendo in your ears. So, Brian, we're very excited about that. We also have some cool other shows happening at Comedy at the Carlson that I feel like we need to mention. I would like to start off with the Rochester Roast Battles, if we can. There's some things you folks need to know. Next Friday is the date where we are canceling entry. You can't enter past next Friday. So if you want to participate in the Rochester Roast Battles here at Comedy at the Carlson, it's going to be a lot of fun, very silly. Anyone's welcome to participate. There's a form on carlsoncast.com that you just fill out. Basically, just your quick info, an email, phone number, and 10 facts about yourself so that whoever's writing jokes about you, you know, has a little something to work with.
A little bit of an even playing field.
Keep it even. And it's going to be just a lot of fun, good-spirited, mean-spirited fun, I guess.
Yeah. Depends on who I'm facing.
Sometimes well, that's right. You entered, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
I want Ross to enter.
I do too.
I want Ross in the roast battles.
I think Ross.
Show me Ross.
I think Ross would do better than we think he would, except for he'd laugh at his own jokes all the time.
That's the problem. I think
you're so ugly. Look at that face. It's so ugly.
That's the issue. I'm hilarious.
When Justin Brown was in a few weeks ago, he described my comedy style perfectly, which is like big laugh and then like a good line with a big laugh and then amiable rambling for a while and then sort of chuckle to myself and then the cycle hopefully starts again. You know,
I just would love to see, you know, I actually kind of want Brian and Ross to go against each other in
roast
battles.
God, that'd be fantastic.
I would write jokes for you, Ross. I would help you write jokes.
I don't know. I can you know I can be vicious when I
do. You want to do it? You should do it.
Come on, Ross. I think catty is more the word I would use
well,
to describe.
That's all right.
Ross, I think you should enter the roast battle.
Fucking hate crime.
Now chuckle to yourself. That was a good lie. See, there it is.
Thank you.
That's how that works.
Well, I'm going to sort of just ramble for a minute. And
all right.
We'll
so
just go and go on.
Next week is the cutoff deadline for entry. So get on that. Now, the other show that we are very excited about here at Comedy at the Carlson that I feel like we need to plug is Rochester Riff Night. Excited about this. March 1st, one night only, one show, 8 p.m. in the Rickles Room. We are watching Mars Attacks, and not only
many,
are we watching
many times.
It, well, we've watched it three times now. I've watched it three or four times.
You
this
hate
point.
It already.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't like it to begin with. It's like people fondly remember this movie. It's not that good, and it's easy to make fun of. You're going to enjoy it.
I fondly remembered it until we watched it again, and then I was like, oh, no, this was not as good as
it's nostalgic because it's from the 90s. Yeah.
We are going to smash that movie. So if you want to come watch it, have fun. Tickets are $10. They're available now on carlsoncomedy.com. So that is all of our business for today. We are going to be back in just a minute with Tommy Bechtold after a few words about the shows we have coming up here at the Carlson. See you in just a second. God, we are back, ladies and gentlemen. Joining us in the studio.
By God! His hands are taped.
Our guest today, what can I say about this guy? He is a Rochester native. Mm. He is killing it in Los Angeles, and he is back in town tonight for two shows here at Comedy at the Carlson, which put your hands together. All three of you people who are actually in the room, and all of you at home or at work watching this on your computers. Clap for Tommy Bechtold, damn it.
Clap in your office.
Thanks
make,
for having
make
me.
Make people think you're crazy.
Yes. This is nice.
Man, I haven't seen you in what feels like years.
Yes.
And before that, it felt like decades.
Yes. Well, we've been friends for almost 20 years,
I think. I thought about that yesterday.
Yes.
We, weirdest thing about Tommy, and we'll just get the backstory out of the way, mm-hmm. We went to high school together.
We did.
We sat next to each other.
Was it business law?
Did they teach law
not
Webster?
Not even.
It's not that good of a school.
I think we watched like the movie Copycat or something like that.
Yeah.
We watched like a sexual thriller and they were like, this is business law.
We watched Wall Street.
This is business law, guys.
Okay. We had a lot of the teachers at our old high school were like sports coaches.
Yes.
And this is a true thing. They were all sports coaches. Webster had like ridiculous wrestling, ridiculous
shocking,
football.
This is a shocking revelation that Webster does not have a premium education experience.
Listen, it used to all just be like farm stuff. They used to teach everybody
yes,
out there.
Yeah,
and they turned
right.
it into a summer. So like long story short, like all of our teachers, most of our teachers, there's some really, really good teachers who care. And then there were other ones who were like, yeah, I used to coach Division II offensive line. And now here
they're
I
like
am.
Drawing up plays and like they just like slip a VHS tape in and they're just watching game film over on their other.
Right.
Like,
yeah. It's not part of that. But we had this and we had a professor who basically, or a teacher who just, it was video time and it was like homeroom.
Yes.
So every day we were just watching Copycat.
It was a free for all.
There was one teacher, and I will not say his name, but I had a criminal justice class my senior year as an elective.
Yes.
And he let us watch Goodfellas.
Yeah. That's perfect for any high school kid.
True story.
I mean, it teaches you business relationships for sure.
Uh-huh.
It teaches you, you know, the cutthroat instincts you need to have when you're in a business, and sometimes, you know, you have to learn how to terminate people
and how to make sauce.
Right, and how to make cut the garlic sauce. So thin that it prison liquefies in the pan.
I think about that scene every time I cut garlic.
I think about that every time I'm threatened with a prison sentence. I'm like, it's not so bad. You make a nice pasta dinner every Sunday night.
Just, I don't think that's how it really works.
Befriend an Italian. That's right. You'll eat well in jail.
That's, you know, that was what my grandfather told me on his deathbed. He said, befriend an Italian.
That's the only reason
it's nice to know you, Tommy.
You're my one, Vinny.
Thank you,
You're
buddy.
My one.
We're going to go to jail together.
That's right.
So, yeah, we sat next to each other. We had a good time. And we didn't see each other for years after high school at all.
No.
Randomly ran into each other in a store one day.
Yes, in the Wegmans, formerly Chase Pitkin, now was it Hobby Lobby?
Or? I think it was a Hobby. That's right, it was a Hobby Lobby. Yeah. And I'm like, dude, it's so good to see you.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, it's great to see you too. Yeah. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, well, I'm in L.A. doing comedy. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And like, we both looked at each other like, that's a very strange thing.
Yes. It was funny because it's like, you know, we used to joke around so much. And like when we would hang out, like we would be very like silly. So it makes sense, this career trajectories for us.
Yeah.
But it was funny that we never put that together. Like we just parted ways after high school and we're like, well, we'll just never see this person again. And then we ran into each other and figured out we both had similar aspirations and whatnot. Huh. So yeah, it was very nice.
One of us is doing a little better than the other. You're welcome for being on my show, by the way.
Please, you don't have to make me feel bad about myself. Listen, I flew Economy Plus JetBlue. I'm doing okay, or whatever it's called. Even more legroom, I think. It's called like the fat person seat. Like they're like, please, they're like, now your seatmate won't be as mad at you if you spring for the $75 to sit in the bigger seat.
That fancy pants Burbank to Rochester flight.
I did not. LAX flies direct to Buffalo now. This is fascinating for anyone watching. They're like, let's travel tips.
Absolutely. Yes. I feel like, though, say you and I ever did decide to go on tour together, separate planes.
Yes.
No fucking way.
Separate airports.
Like you're the president.
I don't think we should
president.
Even go through security together.
Travel together.
You're probably right. But no, I'm just saying, you know, you don't learn the tip of planes. Weight balance.
Right.
Put us both on opposite sides by the wings.
You guys have to sit in the galley on opposite sides.
Can one of you please sit in the cockpit to balance this plane out?
And I get to be a pilot?
You're sitting on the pilot's lap? That's a dream for me.
Yeah. So what's interesting to me is we've had some conversations. Like we're not super close friends, but it's really good to see you. I mean that.
Yeah, likewise.
And there's a lot that I don't know about your trajectory and all the stuff that you've done since, you know, the year 2000 when we walked out of that building.
That's right.
So here's what I want to know, Tommy. When did you move to L.A.? What year was it? How'd that happen?
I moved to L.A. in 2008. So was that 11 years ago now?
Yep.
And I mean, basically the short version of how it happened was I was in school. I went to SUNY Oswego. First I went to St. John Fisher. Then I went to SUNY Oswego and I was going to school to be a teacher and I was not doing well. Like I'd been asked to leave SUNY Oswego for grades.
You couldn't figure out the VHS tape?
It turns out you can't just watch Copycat every day in class, which is what I tried to explain to my teachers. I was like, no, you just pop in Copycat and then I do a quiz.
Tommy's papers on Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
No one loved my thesis on Basic Instinct.
Right,
but it was,
right.
So I started looking on like job forums, and I saw like a couple things for like production, like we're doing a commercial, come be a PA in this commercial, and then I saw they were shooting a movie here, so I kind of weaseled my way in, like bullied my way into getting a job on this movie.
That would be The Alphabet Killer?
First it was this movie called Sophomore, and from Sophomore I got on The Alphabet Killer because the offices were across the street from each other, so I walked over to Alphabet Killer. And
look at this networking mother hucker right here.
Well, I was desperate to not go back to college, basically, so it was like, and from there, I met people that lived in L.A. that were working locally on these things, and I started to get a little bit of a resume. And then, I don't know, like, when I was in school, I always was like, I think I could be funny. I think I could be in front of the camera or something like that, but I never wanted to do the school plays.
Right.
I don't know why. But so when I was working on Sophomore, I asked the director if I could be in the movie, and I thought he would be like, no, and he was like, yeah, sure, there's a part for you. So I got into the Screen Actors Guild.
You just asked?
Yes. I called him and asked him.
What was your job in production?
I was the production manager for that movie. I started as the PA, key PA, and I moved up to production manager because, I mean, it took like 3 years to finish that movie. And then in Alphabet Killer, I was the office coordinator.
Okay.
So like just basically making copies, professional copy maker. But so I got in the Actors Union, and then then from there, I knew someone that was lived in Burbank that was from Irondequoit, and they were going to Spain for a month. And they said, if you watch my house in Burbank and feed my cats, you can live there rent-free for a month. So I drove my car out there with that plan. I said, I have a month to find an apartment, a job, and that was 11 years ago.
Wow.
So now I'm here.
Now, when you get out to L.A., and you, you know, obviously production background, which is great, very cool, did you start saying to yourself, I got to move towards the comedy side of things?
I mean, I was desperate to do it. I mean, I was just growing up. I mean, my parents let me watch Saturday Night Live at an insanely young age, like to the point where like none of the actual inappropriate humor landed with me. Like, I mean, I watch these sketches now as an adult and I'm like, oh, this is a totally different experience. Because I remember watching them.
Some stuff does not hold up well.
Oh, no. I mean, if you watch the first season, it's like, this is not funny at all. And then for the time, it was groundbreaking. But I think it's just, you know, obviously things shift and change in the way they're able to. I mean, you watch stuff now and it sucks on that show sometimes. Oh, yeah. So it's like, but I think like I was just, you know, when you're like a goofy big kid, like in school, your biggest defense mechanism is to make people laugh. So like at parties, I would always, you know, try and be funny. Like I thought that was going to be like my in with people and that would make my friends like me. So that was always, I think that. When the crazy thing is when that turns into your like career aspirations, where you're like, people will still like, I mean, I'm 35 now, and I'm like, well, if I'm funny tonight, people will like me, you know. So it's like, you know, it's a little
they'll tolerate you.
Yeah, exactly.
You just get a paycheck at the end of the night, but it's still the exact same.
Right.
Listen, nobody's inviting the funny fat guy over after the party. They're
Like, they prefer he leave.
Yeah.
Or give them a ride home with someone else that they're attracted to. They're like, yes, absolutely. Sure. But yeah, so I had read Tom Shale's book Live from New York, which was like the anthology of Saturday Night Live, all the interviews with all the people, and they had mentioned Improv Olympic in Second City and Groundlings. So when I got to L.A., I just went to each of those places and was like, all right, I'm going to figure out.
So SNL is like your biggest influence.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Who was your who'd you really dig? Like, some of your favorites?
I mean, Phil Hartman, I think, is my all-time favorite.
Can't argue with
he's
Phil Hartman.
I think he's the best. Dana Carvey is incredible. I mean, I think like he's known so much for impressions, but if you watch those episodes from like 87 to like 91, like he has the, I mean, obviously he's Garth too.
Yeah.
So it's like if you can forget the impression side and see the characters that he does, they're so funny.
I'm trying to recall the stand-up special that he did for Comedy Central.
Yes.
That was amazing. That was one of the most influential things for me personally.
Yes. Just watching like that last special. Year. Wasn't like last year.
No,
year
no. This is the one he did in the 90s.
We had the Katharine Hepburn Oscar bit. Where Jimmy Stewart and Katharine Hepburn.
She's flooded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to. I think she's flooded.
Same for me. That was big for me, too.
Huge.
Yeah.
Huge. That was one of the best. Naked Time.
Yes.
The whole thing with his kids.
Naked Time.
That was an amazing special. So I'm with you on Dana Carvey.
Yeah.
If we're creating the SNL, you know.
Yeah.
What do you call it? Mount Rushmore.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're going Phil Hartman.
Yeah.
Throwing some Dana Carvey in there. You got two more spots, Tommy.
Two more spots. Oh, man. It's so crazy because, like, I feel like you got to put Kristen Wiig on there, right? I mean, like, Rochester's own Kristen Wiig, Honey,
Falls. Well, we are biased.
Yeah. And then I think you got to go Will Ferrell. Because, I mean, Tina Fey called Will Ferrell the best sketch comedian she'd ever seen. So it's like, you know, if one of the best calls another person the best.
Sure.
I mean...
You can't really argue with that. They have an insight that we do not. Right,
exactly.
He's just funny just sitting there.
Yes. That's the thing about him is it's like, I've seen him live a couple of times, and it's just ridiculous. Like, he doesn't have to do anything. It's people just like lose. Like, I think it's because we all have memories.
Do you realize like what a curse that has to
be? Oh, God. Well, yeah, when you listen to him in interviews, and he's just trying to be normal, and the guy interviewing him is just cracking up, and it's like, I don't think he's making a joke here.
And he's like when he's trying to have his dog put down or something. And
you know, honestly?
Honestly, this has been a pleasure killing your dog today, Mr. Farrell. Thank you. Would you mind signing the corpse of your dog?
I feel like it's a genie's wish that went wrong.
Yes.
Like he's like, I gotta be the funniest man alive.
Right? The monkey paw. The monkey paw. It's a curse.
Exactly right.
I was gonna say the Midas. The Midas touch. Yeah.
And other famous curses.
Yeah, and other famous curses. Will Ferrell.
He'll never win a World Series either.
That's right.
I just think that like. Okay, so Will Ferrell, we got Will Ferrell. I'd throw up there maybe, I like Eddie Murphy big time back in the
day. Eddie Murphy's amazing. Yeah.
Eddie Murphy.
Kate McKinnon now kills me. She's kind of got the Will Ferrell thing going about her where she can just make a face and you're like, you die.
Is legit.
She's awesome.
Kate McKinnon, she the first season I was like, oh, I can't stand it. It's just this girl who does the same voice all the time. And then it's become very, very, very funny.
I agree. And I think, like, you know, you go that great cast with Will Ferrell, you give Molly Shannon, and you have, I mean, even like
Tracy Morgan. Are you familiar with what Mount Rushmore is?
I know. There's four.
There's four.
But in mine, there's like 16 underneath them, the supporting players.
Sure.
Like, just, you know.
He's going to. You're going to need government funding to build that mountain.
We're going
to
build that mountain, and we're going to make Lorne Michaels pay for it.
I feel like there's an emergency situation here.
Yeah, I'm declaring a national.
We need the SNL Mount Rushmore.
Oh, we shouldn't be joking about that. That might be happening right now.
Yeah.
Well, lucky for us.
Then it's topical, guys. We're on top of it. We're getting out in front of the story.
So you went to Improv Olympics, right?
Yes, I ended up at Improv Olympic, and I... So, actually, I have a decent story about this. The day that I went to Improv Olympic, that morning, I went to this place called Central Casting in Los Angeles, which is where you go and they take, like, a Polaroid photo of you, and they put you on this directory for doing extra work, basically. So, they're like, oh, Gilmore Girls is shooting a scene in a high school. They need 100 people who look, you know, at least close to high school age.
Right.
So, you make, like, $80 a day doing that. Anyway, I get out of there, and these two really cute girls come up to me, and I'm wearing a Guinness t-shirt, and they're like, Guinness, are you Irish? And I'm like, well, I'm, you know, I'm Irish.
Sure.
Grandparents, yeah. I'm like, well, these girls are so attractive. Why are they talking to you? And they're like, we work for a manager. Would you like to speak to, do you want to meet with our manager? He's a career counselor. And I'm thinking, like, this is such incredible luck. Like, I'm going to meet with this guy. These girls found me, like, they must like my look or something.
So this is during your 30 days of just hanging out?
This is like this is like day two.
Okay. So, all right.
So they give me his information. They get my information. I give them way too much information for them being complete strangers. Like, I give them, like, phone number, where I'm staying.
There's a picture of my friend's cat that I'm taking care of.
I gave him my credit card. No,
so but, then I woke up 3 days later.
Right. Exactly. Well,
I'm missing a kidney.
Not far. I mean, I was already missing one. Now I just, you know, I'm just ghost riding with no kidneys right now. But they... But so they're like, and they were like, can you meet with him today? And I was like, oh, I have something to do tonight because I had tickets to go see a show at I.O. And they're like, okay, well, he's going to get a hold of you. So I get in the car and I drive, I'm driving away, and I get a phone call. And it's this guy, Eric, who's this manager. And he's like, hey, man, I really would love to meet with you today. I'm going out of town tomorrow. Can you meet today? And I was like, all right, screw it. This is a good, I might be shooting myself in the foot to not meet with this guy who's supposedly going to help my career. So he gives me the address. I have no idea where anything is in LA. I plug it into my GPS. I drive to the place. I pull in. The gates say Church of Scientology in huge letters across the top of the gate. And it's that castle, that Scientology castle they have on Franklin Avenue right in Hollywood. And I'm like, oh, no. I don't know. Can we can we swear? I was like, fuck it. I'm going in. I'm going in.
You might want to look to your left. There's something we want, or your right. There's something we want to talk to you about.
Oh, so toxic work environment.
That's a Scientology magazine.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh. Perfect. Well, anyway, I'd love to talk to you guys because I've been a member of the church for 11 years. No, but so I was like, I'll go in and I'll just, I know this is going long, but I...
tell the story.
So I get in there because I'm just like, I know I'm not going to join the Church of Scientology. At least I thought I wasn't going to. And then, but I'm like, all right, I'm gonna go in and, like, I've got to see what this is all about. Just because it was so, you know, at this point it was all, like, Tom Cruise acting like a maniac, John Travolta making that insane Battleship Earth or Battle, whatever. Battlefield Earth. My knowledge of the Scientology was just that it's, like, this, like, sci-fi world that is, like, rich celebrities go to.
Sure.
So I go in, it's, like, ornate, everything's really nice. It's all young people in the same, like, blue slacks, white shirts, white dress shirts, male and female.
Nothing weird here.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, uniforms are generally, like, symbolic of free thinking anyway.
Blue slacks, like, I'm out.
Yeah. That's what I think. Blue slacks aren't flattering. So that was a non-stopper for me, or non-starter. So I go in, and they have me grab those tin can things that measure if you're a wizard or not. Geez. Like, they're like, if you like, hold them, and they're like...
Sure, sure.
And I was very powerful. You're not going to believe it. They were like...
Yeah.
They're like,
you had all sorts of thetans in you.
You know what? Oh, I had thetans surging through me.
I think everybody's...
I have a feeling
first measure is very powerful.
I think it's a confidence booster. But then they have you take a multiple choice test. And mind you, I told these people I'm on a time crunch. Like, I was like, I'm coming early or coming today, but I have tickets to this thing later that I have to get to. So they had me take a 400 question multiple choice test that's like basically it's basically one of those things where it's like, describe this, your level of enthusiasm for this, somewhat likely, likely, very likely, definitely, or whatever. And it's like, have you ever confronted a human being and gotten so angry you've considered killing them? Like, it was like questions like that. Like, they were like, and then it would be like, you open the refrigerator and the milk is spoiled. Are you angry? Don't care. So it was like,
do you go kill that person?
Yeah, like,
you
ran the gamut of like murder and like throwing away spoiled food. So anyway, 400 questions takes forever, and I'm like whipping through, not even really answering them.
During this whole time, think you were actually going to meet with an entertainment manager?
No, at this point, I knew this was all a charade.
Like, why didn't you walk the fuck out?
Because I wanted to see what else was going to happen.
Okay, like, see, that's what I love about you. That's a comedian.
It was just morbid curiosity. So anyway, they sit me back in the waiting room, and I'm like, hey, guys, I really got to go. And they're like, okay, no problem, no problem. Can we just put on this DVD for you?
No.
And I was like, yes, I want to see the DVD. I want to see what the... And the DVD is... I have the DVD still. I have the
DVD.
They
gave you a copy.
They let me keep the copy of it because, like, in their mind, I'll show it to people. And I do. I show it to people as a joke. I'm like, you mind watching this for a second? But it says nothing about Scientology. It's like the first thing is like an eagle soaring through like a valley. And it's like, man has the right to be happy. Like, that's like, they're like, that's what Scientology is based on. Man's right to seek happiness. And like, well, that's
sorry, awesome. Ladies.
Yeah. We said men. And we meant it. But so finally I watched the whole DVD and I'm just sitting there and they start to do another thing. And I'm like, listen, guys, I gotta go. I said I had a thing. I was like, I've been here way longer than I already said I was going to be. I got to get going. I want to get tickets. I have tickets to see Bob Odenkirk at I.O. do the Armando show, is like, if you've ever been to UCB, it's like Ass Cat. Yeah. It's basically monologues and improv. It was going to be a great show. So as soon as I say I'm leaving, I stand up. The doors of these like giant like oak doors fly open and this guy walks out. I said his name was Eric. And he's like, Tommy, good to meet you. Let's go in and have a chat. I'm so sorry they kept you waiting. That shouldn't have happened. You should have gotten right in to meet with me. So he was like, you know, full of shit.
Sure.
And so I went in and met with him, and he explained to me that, like, well, I was a very powerful wizard. I had a lot of things I needed to work on. Uh-huh. And you won't believe this. The Church of Scientology offered pathways to fix the problems that I had.
Right.
So he laid out some pricing plans. I think I had $17 in my checking account at that point, which I just told him. I was like, look, I'm going to level with you. I'm not interested, and I have $17 in my checking account. And he's like, we would take that and start. We would take that as a down payment if you wanted to pay that today and start classes.
I bet.
I said, no, thank you. And I took my DVD. And I left, and I haven't made my mind up. It's not a definite no for me, right. But it's leaning that way. And then I went to I.O., and I joined a different cult, like the cult of
improv.
Comedy. Yeah, improv. Improv, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Is improv a cult?
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
Yes.
I say that a lot. People don't believe me.
Yes.
Could you please explain why for the people who don't think about it?
Let me preface by saying I love improv. And when it's done right and with a certain amount of like detachment from taking it too seriously, it's joyful and enjoyable to watch. I'm hoping it'll be fun to watch tonight. When you take it too seriously and you become cliquey and you suppress actual talent in favor of people who are more on board with the overall message of like coolness or hipness to a certain brand. Mm-hmm. And all of them are guilty. People shit on UCB a lot, but it's like UCB gets shit on because they're the most successful. And they certainly have that element. But it's like there are very funny people that get bullied out of improv theaters because they don't play the right way, which to me is the definition of a cult. Like, you know, it's like, they're not the definition, but it's...
Well, when you sign up to learn improv, it's like, hey, come in here and watch this DVD.
Right.
And then we have pricing plans here for the classes we're going to have you take.
And they're like, buy the uniform, buy a t-shirt, or buy a flannel and jeans and Converse sneakers. Like, that's
I'm pretty sure UCB would take your $17 too.
100%. But now they'd be like, yes, and add $500 to that. And that's the cost of level one improv, which is literally, I mean, I could give everyone the hack of level one improv.
But then they'd assassinate you.
Yeah. It's like, just don't say no to whatever someone says to you. And then you pass level one.
Yes and.
Yes, exactly.
Yes and.
And like, look, like I said, I'm not... A lot of improvisers shit on it or, you know, talk bad about improv because they want to be stand-ups, you know, like they mm-hmm. like that world is cooler. And it is. And it's braver. It's certainly... To be a stand-up takes a lot more courage than to be an improviser. But improv can be wonderful. It can be super fun. It can be super funny. Some of the best stand-up comedians are also good improvisers, you know, and vice versa.
I don't think it's vice versa as much. I've thought about this quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I think, Brian, you and I were talking about this one time, and I think you said it really well. Brian goes, I feel like there's a lot of really great comedians who do improv, but not a lot of comedians are good at going into improv.
Yeah, there's,
like,
there's just a lot of guys come out of improv and become really great stand-ups.
Sure.
But the other way around doesn't happen that often.
That's
rivers fair. Flow one way, Tommy.
That's a good point. Yeah. Not my rivers, man.
My
rivers go both ways.
And they flow deep.
Bisexual rivers.
I suck at improv because I want it to all be about me.
Well,
like, that's why I do stand-up.
And I would say that is the habit of stand-ups. That is the biggest downfall, is that they can't get out of the stand-up brain. Which, by the way, do stand up. That's awesome. If you could do that, you know, like, I think in Los Angeles, there's a big pressure to be good at improv because there's this emphasis that, like, casting directors are going to want you to. And I mean, to be fair, I've booked a few jobs on being able to just riff in the room. But for the most part, if you don't enjoy doing improv or it's not something that's coming easy, you should not do it. You shouldn't force yourself to go through 7 levels at $400 a pop, which is basically, like, you know, was that $3,000 plus all of the time you'll spend on coaching and stuff? It's ridiculous.
You could watch your kids grow up too.
Yes.
There's lots of things
you can do. Or have a meaningful relationship.
Lots of choices.
Or learn how to cook or adopt a dog or, you know.
Oh my God. There's so many things you can do. Clean your house.
Yeah.
You can do lots of things.
But you can not do any of them if you do a lot of improv, and then you can just watch your life slowly fall apart.
Now, I think that you hit the nail on the head when you said it's important when you're getting into anything is to, especially the entertainment business, if you're just learning it, learn.
Yes.
Learn,
yeah.
But don't be a sucker.
Yes.
There's a lot of people out there, whether it's LA, who want to take your money for stuff that just is ridiculous.
Yep. Yes. Oh, of course. I mean, I think the entertainment industry is like the best comparison I heard is like, it's like the gold mining towns, where it's like there's a lot of people there trying to, like, find gold in the river, and the real people making money are the people who own the general store, the doctor's office.
Exactly right.
So it's like, of course, if I get on a TV show or star in a movie, I'm going to make a lot of money, or write a movie or something like that. But it's like, for the most part, the headshot photographers, the acting coaches, the, like, stylist people.
If you want to make it in L.A., be a headshot
photographer. Oh, my God. If someone's moving to L.A. and they wanted a piece of advice and they have enough time and money, learn how to take pictures.
My wife takes mine.
Yeah.
She's a real photographer.
That's awesome.
So it's handy. L.A., here I come.
Even at my poultry level, I've met with so many shady managers and bullshit stuff. You know, you're just like, no.
Who's the shadiest manager you ever met? Stories I love.
I know Vinny's and I's because we were together.
I met a guy, I used to call him Lemmy because he looked like Lemmy from Motorhead, but no success.
I met a guy who...
White Cadillac and everything.
He had a white Cadillac that was... It was like... No, it wasn't. It was a wagon. It was a woody wagon that was rusted.
It was a woody wagon.
Yeah.
And you didn't sign with him?
Like a 70s woody wagon.
That's a real what if right
there. Listen, there was some real harsh language in the contract.
Yeah.
There was a...
Cowboy hat and a leather vest.
Oh, God.
He had a duster, Tommy. He had a duster.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not hearing any negatives so far. I might ask you for this guy's information once we go off the air.
Well, he's managing our tour.
Oh, he has us on just a single engine plane. We're in like a Cessna together.
Yep, and we're staying.
It's the Big Bopper and the other Big Bopper.
We're staying at the finest Super 8s. He's trying to get us first
the
floor.
Super 8s.
But
I like the Super 8s because they don't even try and get the blood out of the sheets.
All right.
Okay, so I'll tell you really quick.
Don't get the blood out of
they're just like, fuck it, they're in there. So
what shadiest manager?
Shadiest manager was. This guy got a hold of me through a casting website that's called LA Castings, where it's like Fox casts a lot of their shows out of there, a lot of commercials. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I'd love to meet with you for an interview. Come to my office. It's in Beverly Hills. And so I went to his office, which was actually just the hallway of a real office. I realized, like, he had like a receptionist desk set up, and then he had a receptionist, and he came out and met me in that hallway, and we never went into an office, which I later learned was because there was no office. Is this all like a scam that he has?
Uh-huh. He just bribed the
receptionist. Did he walk out of the elevator doors like it was his office? Like, oh, I'm here. Hello.
No, that would have been incredible. He walked like from down the hall, but like he never left. Like he was there, and I'm sure as soon as I left, he sat down at the receptionist desk. You know what I mean? I'm sure that was his desk.
He was a receptionist and just tried to get his own game started?
I think he was a one-man band. I think he was his, I think, which, by the way, is a decent hustle, but the fact to not disclose that and to act like, he was a gatekeeper, or like, or we were just having an informal meeting, and then he called me Chubbs the whole time, which
Jesus,
I'm not saying is not accurate, but it's also like, I didn't know him. I didn't know this guy. I was like, are you kidding? And he was just one of those people. This is like, you know, I'm sure it happens in every city. I just see it a lot more in LA. The people who are clearly on cocaine and the people like versus the people who might be on it. He was clearly on cocaine. Like he was not.
Hey, Chubbs.
Yeah.
So where do you see yourself 5 years?
He was just so passionate too. I'm like, nobody makes this amount of eye contact and speaks with this much passion unless they've had a gram or two of cocaine for breakfast. Like he was like, we're going to do big things this year. We're going to do big things. Chubbs, I believe in you. I think we could build some stuff on you. I'm like, well, this is bullshit. I'm sorry. So he was probably the worst.
Chubbs,
which is, you know, fastest way to my heart.
Should be the title of your book. This should be the title of your book. Yeah. Yes. Chubbs. We're gonna do big things, Chubbs.
And shockingly, I don't think he's
this fall.
I don't think he's still around. I don't think he's still managing. I don't know if he's on Earth after, you know,
he was. He might
you know, too many of those cocaine breakfasts.
Yeah,
so.
you do a cocaine buffet for breakfast.
He might have got swept up by the Scientologists.
That's, oh, wow.
So we tell a lot of funny stories about how shady LA can be.
Yes.
But you've had some legit success, my friend. You've had some real cool stuff going on. I mean, obviously you were on The Middle.
Yes.
Now that was ABC, right? Or
that
NBC.
Was ABC. Yeah. Yep.
ABC. So you do an ABC sitcom where you're a reoccurring character. I believe you did 27 episodes according to IMDb.
Yes, I think that is correct.
Well, Brian told me earlier he checked.
Oh, yeah.
So
yes.
Brian did the research today.
Yeah.
Well, then I won't lie. I did 40.
You did 27.
God damn it. You didn't do one over 27.
You know what the nice thing is, though? If you do more than one, you can call it recurring. So
I love it. Yeah. Now, when you're doing a show like that, number one, how did you just audition for that? Did you know people?
What happened? I had auditioned for that show probably 15 times, like, you know, for small parts. Like, one episode is like The Bully, or one episode is, I think, when a guy who worked at a restaurant, different stuff like that. And finally, I auditioned for this part that was like the role of Kenny. He's the roommate of the main character, the oldest son, and he doesn't talk and he just plays video games all day. And I'm like, all right, that sounds a lot like my real life.
What I love about Industrial Light and Magic is that they cast a guy in his mid-30s.
Yes.
He's 20 year old.
Right. But
how do you audition for something where you literally just do nothing?
So they had a little bit of improv, but basically the main thing. So first, I wore a wig on the show the entire time, red-haired wig. So, so they had me facing them or back to them in a chair, like an office chair with a PlayStation 2 controller, and I just was kind of heavy sighing and like reacting to the dialogue. It was like glorified extra work, to be honest. Like, right. I mean, not talking bad about it, but. I mean, I did that for the first season. That's all I really did. It was just like I was in the background. They showed my face, I think, once. And like it was like weird. It was such a weird thing because I'm in the credits at the end of every episode. So it's seemingly successful, but there's no real acting going on. And there's no. And then finally in the second season, they like did this big reveal where I started talking.
Uh-huh.
And like that was when my family started acknowledging I was on the show. they were like, oh, you're on the show now. I'm like, well, this is my 12th episode, but yes.
Sure.
But it was nice. I mean, it was supposed to be a two-episode job. Mm-hmm. It ended up being 27. And like, you know, by the time I was done, it was a really nice thing on my resume. And,
sure.
I was very lucky.
So when you're going into NBC and you get 27 episodes of anything on your resume, that's a kind of a big deal.
Yeah, that was huge for me. That was great. Yeah.
Now, as far as tonight's show, it's the TNT show. There are tickets available for the 10 p.m. Show right now. The early show is sold out. I want to congratulate the guys that hate this podcast for putting it on. They were our Showmageddon winners last year. They won. Nice.
Promoting machines.
They're great.
That was... Todd's killing it.
And also, really Todd and I have the same aunt. Not by blood, but like my Aunt Lori and Uncle Gary are his Aunt Lori and Uncle Gary as well. And we never knew that.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Wow. Rochester is a small, incestuous bird.
It is. that was what I took. I took away disgust from it. It wasn't amusing to me. I said, oh, God.
I used to again? Like Uncle Gary.
Uncle Gary. Anyone who's seen Todd would agree with you that this is worth being disgusted if you're related to him.
No, they're great though. I mean, that was really they've been promoting it like crazy. It's very exciting. I love doing this. Like I hope the show's going to be good. I'm sure the stand-ups are going to be awesome. And improv is, you know, a little unwieldy, but I think it'll be a lot of fun. And like this is just so I feel so lucky to be able to do this. This place is beautiful and
cool.
Really excited.
I'm glad you like that. So we're doing stand-up tonight. A little bit of improv.
Yes.
You're doing improv.
Yes. We'll close out the set with like a probably a 25-30 minute improv set with Tom Malloy and I. guy.
I was going to get there. Tom Malloy.
Yes.
No, no, please step on my toes all day long. I'm the worst host in the world.
I didn't say that.
I meant it. He's saying it. I'm saying it.
I feel like you're threatening
Tom Malloy, who did the Alphabet Killer
movie. He did, yeah. But he gave, that was like my first. I worked on Sophomore, but then Sophomore was on a hiatus, and Alphabet Killer was my first like complete project that I worked from start to finish on. Mm. That was a neat experience.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know what that is, it's a very interesting movie about a bunch of kids that got murdered in Rochester.
Well, and one of my jobs was to cold call companies and see if we could get sponsorship or like brand releases. So like if we wanted to show like a bottle of wine or something in a shot. And one of my favorite thing would be like, hi, how you doing? My name's Tommy. I'm working for a feature film shooting in Rochester, and we'd love to use your wines in the background of some of our kitchen scenes. And they'd be like, oh, okay.
You're not going to murder a child with this.
What is the movie called? The Alphabet Killer. And then it would either be like, ha, ha, no, I'm sorry, we won't be doing that, or just flat-out hang-ups.
Really?
Like
was, nobody went for it?
There was one. Is there a wine company, winery, I believe they're
There's
called?
There's a lot of wineries.
Called Dr. Frank's?
Yes, yeah. Dr. Frank's. I was
going to
say.
Dr. Frank's
I was gonna
hung
guess
in there.
That was the one that would do it. They hung I know Frank. I'm sure he would have been told.
They were awesome. So shout-out to them still. That was great.
But, Dr. Frank's Dry Riesling. Try some today. responsibly.
Goes great with the haunted memories of your child being.
I know it is. It's one of my wife's favorites. She buys that stuff. Yeah, she loves it.
Yeah.
Like a Kool-Aid.
Well, it's nothing like grieving parents toasting a glass of Dr. Frank's as they talk to a police investigator about the murder of their child.
I don't know where our daughter Abigail Adams went. This goes down so smooth.
Would you like to drown your sorrows?
Yes.
We recommend 4 bottles of Dr. Frank's.
That whole Alphabet Killer thing is really crazy. Yeah. Like the actual story behind it. If you're watching this and you don't know what it is, in Rochester, it was the 70s, right?
Yeah.
Late 70s. I think it was 3 little girls were kidnapped and murdered. And what was so weird about it, where the alphabet came into, was like each of the girls had the same letter as their first name and their last name. So it was like Abigail Adams, Wanda Wackovic, or something like that.
Cleary or something like that.
Hated alliteration.
Yeah, hated alliteration so much. Jesus. But then the bodies were found in a town matching. So like Wanda Wackovic was found in Webster and Mia Miles was found in Macedon.
Yeah.
It was really crazy.
Was he just writing a terrible limerick?
Yes.
That's all it was. Jesus.
Alphabet Killer, I think you meant rapper. Dark. It's dark.
I know. Oh, what a way to start Friday morning.
Da, 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 da. We're going to be so fun.
Oh, man. No.
You see, I really feel like improv or Scientology would work fine for me. I think it would really give me a
We'd love to have you either place. Like, I still got some.
Anywhere but central casting, please.
I just these 2 tin cans you got to grab a hold of.
So, Tommy, I got to tell you, man, it's really good catching up with you. And all the success in the world, dude. I'm really happy to see you here. And I hope that you will consider this your home club when you're in Rochester.
100%. Thank you. I'm really looking forward to performing tonight. And I'm so glad we got to catch up. And hopefully we do many more.
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely, man. Anything you ever want to do, just let your buddy Vinny know.
I will.
Folks, we're going to be back. Don't forget to get your tickets for the 10 o'clock show tonight. You can also get tickets for Orny Adams in the main room. He's doing 2 shows tonight and tomorrow, 7:30. Tickets are available, carlsoncomedy.com. We're going to kick it over to a quick little break, and we're going to do the news with Ross. So stay tuned. Thank you for being awesome and watching another episode of the Carlson Cast. Don't forget, we're streaming live on Facebook and YouTube every Friday morning. You could also follow us on social media on Twitter and Instagram at CarlsonCast. You can listen anytime on iTunes, Google Play, and we're now available on Spotify. You should also check out an amazing app called Laughable. And on the Laughable app, you can connect to your favorite comedians in a way you never thought you could before. Download it in the App Store and visit CarlsonCast.com for information on more shows. And don't be a jerk. Rate and review. Yeah. Do what the video says. Subscribe. Do it. Leave a review. Say nice things about us. Say awful things about us. Just do something, you crumb bums.
Just pay attention.
Crumb bums. You bunch of crumb bums. I got nothing.
You live in an alley in 1937.
Help us out. Hit subscribe. Check us out on YouTube, all that good stuff. But we picked up a lot of subscribers this week, actually.
We
picked up a lot. So welcome all you newbies and all that good stuff. This is one of my favorite parts of the show. It is the part of the show where Ross Johnson entertains us with all of the news that we probably shouldn't laugh at, even though it's about comedy. Hey, Ross.
Yeah, it's
correct.
The always physically appealing
Slightly. Looks slightly upset. You might want to move that mic near you. So.
Yeah, I keep moving. It keeps slipping.
Yeah, because Brian messed it up earlier. Because he thought he knew what he was doing. It's all right. Go ahead. Just try to talk towards it.
So I have a I have a bit of breaking news before we get to the news proper. Thank you. So I wanted to keep us updated on the latest Ghostbusters news.
Oh, I'm sure you did.
So this is from HN Entertainment. This just came up this morning. We have the casting breakdown for the film. So we know from this who the four main characters will be.
No, we don't.
This is the casting breakdown. This is speculative, but it seems to be fairly legit. Like, it's not, this isn't official from the studio, but this seems to be fairly legit. And it matches up with everything else we've learned about the new Ghostbusters movie. Would you like to know the format,
I'm
all set up, prepared.
Okay. Unnamed lead boy one will be 13 years old, a conspiracy theorist who is very into fantasy.
I love unicorns and jet fuel doesn't melt steel beams.
Absolutely. lead girl one will play will be 12 years old, a science kid that has trouble connecting with others on an emotional level, has difficulty understanding feelings, and is not aware of how hurtful her comments can be at times.
Someone with autism.
Approximately.
Lead girl one is one of my favorite actresses.
Absolutely.
Yeah. She's amazing.
Lead boy two is going to be another 12-year-old, slender, pale, dark hair, piercing blue eyes, aquiline features, high cheekbones, withdrawn.
What's aquiline?
It's like bird-like, like sort of.
So a thin, skinny nerd.
Not a Vinny, yeah. He's prodigious, bright.
I'm basically just crossing my chances of getting cast off on each one of these.
He's playful in spite of hardship. You could be lead girl one. She's sassy.
Yeah.
And a little
doesn't
clueless.
Understand social cues. Yeah, that's it. Nailed it.
Brilliantly quick thinker under pressure, is at ease with technology, and has a high facility for problem solving. And
that's me, man. That's my spark.
Lead girl two will be 13 years old, fun-loving, a bit of an airhead, always curious, haunted, charmed, dazed.
And charmed at the same time.
Curious, haunted, charmed, dazed, fun-loving, and an airhead. So I'm not sure who their type is for that.
I think that's my daughter.
Might be your daughter.
Might be Ross.
I'm pretty sure she's haunted or possessed or something.
Yeah. Okay. So that's
that was the breaking news.
That was the breaking news. Okay. That was the latest update.
All right. Well, let's do some real news.
Okay.
I'm so sick and tired of this Ghostbusters movie. And when they make it, I'm just going to be angry now.
And I think you should look up the definition of breaking news. I just found it on my phone as breaking news.
It's breaking in that I just found it on my phone this morning. So the first official actual news story. So the National Comedy Center, which we've talked about before because it's sort of localish and we support
Jamestown.
That and all that. They're in Jamestown, New York. So there is a – it's the National Comedy Center, but it's not the official Comedy Center of the United States yet. But Senator Chuck Schumer announced on Friday that the center is to be designated via a provision of the 2019 lands package. It will be designated the National Comedy Center of the United States. So it's the National Comedy Center now. It will soon be the official National Comedy Center of the United States.
Are they going to add just a little sign above it? Says official.
I think they get a plaque.
Is that why the government closed for a month? Because they were busy working on that.
That is why there's literally nothing else going on in the government. So that's the big. There are literally no other problems.
I'm happy about it, but they have other stuff to do.
I'm just thrilled we got to a point in American history where there's nothing else to worry about.
Is that in the wall budget?
That is part of
too soon, Cam.
They're actually going to disassemble it and make it part of the wall.
Oh, I'm sorry. The barrier budget.
The slat budget.
All right, Ross.
All right. So this next one, I debated about bringing this up, and I swear, I think this might be the last time we're going to talk about this guy. But
I take blame for this one.
Brian pushed me over the edge on this. So there's more Bill Cosby news.
Do you need some help with your obesity in the prison? I'll write you a referral to the doctor.
Just, you know, they talk about George Lucas raping childhoods. I don't, you know.
Do they?
They do say George Lucas raped childhoods. I do not use
the word rape lightly, and I'm not in this case, and I'm not intending to in this case. But that is the common parlance.
No, they weren't children. They were just unsuspected women.
Yeah, so absolutely. So Bill Cosby has put out his first public statement from prison.
Wonderful.
As you can guess.
And it's a doozy.
It's entirely contrite and charming. He says, My political beliefs, my actions of trying to humanize all races, genders, and religions landed me in this place surrounded by barbed wire fencing, a room made of steel and iron. He also noted that his cell resembles the quarters of some of the greatest political prisoners: Martin Luther King Jr., Mahatma Gandhi, Nelson Mandela, Randall Robinson, and Dr. Benjamin Chavez. So,
yeah, I don't think he's quite in that company.
His publicist also adds, when I visit him, it's nothing sad about it. He's not sad. He's not remorseful because he did nothing wrong. The sheer volume of people coming forward making an accusation doesn't mean that it's true. And what America has said is that women don't lie. Women do lie. So.
Oh,
Jesus.
He remains a charmer.
And I saw his family doesn't visit him because he said he doesn't want to put them through the media circus. Maybe they just don't want to visit him.
I think that seems...
It's probably a little column A, a little column B.
That his wife, though, seems... I don't know. Yeah, she doesn't go to visit him, but then it's been 100%, like, you know, in the public statements, so I don't know.
I mean, she's sitting there in a giant mansion in Philadelphia. You could go to jail, or you could stay at your giant mansion in Philadelphia.
I guess you could go visit
him in prison.
I guess she's doing fine either
way. I mean... Wow, I can't believe he said that. I can believe he said that, but when you hear it, it's like...
I know, yeah. And I almost, like I said, I almost didn't want to do it just because he's so gross.
He's always a douche. Always.
But it was the Martin Luther King stuff that I was
like... Do you remember when people got...
Seriously?
You're a hero, yeah.
Do you remember when people got mad at Richard Pryor and... Or no, for Eddie Murphy for making fun of Bill Cosby?
Yeah.
Like, it was so... I got nothing. All right, I'm just so annoyed. Keep going.
Okay, what do we got? So there was a little dust up between Monique and Steve Harvey on the Steve Harvey show.
Hey Joe, go ask them in the hallway if they'd keep it down.
He's out there.
Thank you. Oh my God, I'm about to lose my mind.
It's a busy morning here.
Everybody's going crazy out there.
I was trying to read it as audience chatter.
Yeah.
Just people being thrilled. Okay, so Monique went on the Steve Harvey show. There was a lot of discussion after the fact about this that she had slapped him. She apparently did not slap him. So
okay, hold on. I have to reset this. She apparently slapped him after the interview.
No. So sorry. I was trying to build tension. Let me start over.
Please do.
My attempt was to build tension for the story by suggesting that there might have been a slap, which would get you excited about the story that would happen. I didn't do that very well. So she did not slap him. There was discussion about the fact after the fact that there was a suggestion that it was so heated that she had slapped him. She apparently did not. But anyway, the discussion was about Steve Harvey had talked about how Monique had he had started talking to her about how she had boycotted Netflix was one of the things.
Yeah, she started the whole issue with Netflix about was it Amy Schumer got paid a lot more money for her special than Monique did.
Yeah, and
millions and millions.
By a lot of money. Wow. So she essentially did a Netflix boycott. Steve Harvey brought up instances in the past where she had been seen as difficult. Her contention, and it's a whole thing. I won't get into all the details, but her contention was basically like, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. I'm going to stand up for myself. And if I believe this, I'm going to do it. His take was, you know, we're professionals. You go where the money is. You do your job. You get paid. You do their job. So this was a big dust up that a lot of people have been talking about in the past week. It got very heated again to the point where people were, people were spreading incorrect rumors that there was a physical altercation. There was not, but
no, she looks like she's about to smack somebody in the picture.
Yeah, it was an interesting thing, and you know, it's hard to, I don't want to characterize it too much. Just from what I saw, I was a little more Team Monique in the sense that Steve Harvey was seemed very much like, you know, it was sort of like, oh, do your job and take whatever they pay you,
so
and don't worry about it.
She was
sort of more like, I'm gonna, you know, sure, if I don't want to do it because I feel like my integrity is on the line, I'm not going to do it.
Well, here's the thing. A lot of people with her have used the term blacklisted. They've used the term that she's not getting hired because of these particular things, of the reputation of being difficult and stuff like that. So she came on the show, and I think Steve, in a way, was trying to say, hey, listen, you know, it's a business, and, you know, business is business. Mm-hmm. Whenever that happens in 2019, I feel like business is business doesn't get you very far anymore. I feel like everybody immediately finds that to be just a cop out, even though it's true. Business is just business.
Show business.
Yeah. Show business. They look at it as it's a cop out. And I think that's where Monique is coming from. Well, I'm talented, and that's great. But if you're tough to work with, nobody wants the headache. There's a lot of talented people in the world.
I look at
and
Chevy
that's
Chase.
A hard truth.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think in the case of someone like Monique, who's basically like, well, I'll walk away, I think it's hard to fault her as well, even though she's saying, here are the issues, here's why people won't hire me. She's also saying, you know what, I'll walk away from the Netflix. You know, whatever. I'm sure the Netflix was still a...
She tried to lead a national boycott against Netflix, if I recall, didn't she?
I don't know if it was that.
I think it was. I'm calling them to boycott because they're, you know, they're paying her more than they're paying me, and it's a race thing, is what she said.
Yeah, and who knows? You know, I think there's stuff to be said on both sides. You know, I understand professionalism. I respect, you know, this is the job. You do what you get paid. On the other hand, I respect someone who says, you know what, this doesn't seem right to me, right or wrong,
yeah,
and is willing to take a stand for it and willing to take a pay cut if that's what it comes down to.
It's always terrible in life when you feel like you have to pick your battles.
Right.
Because there's so many battles that, like, need to be fought.
Oh, yeah.
There's so many battles out there that we really need to, like, look at. But the fact of the matter is everybody's tired now, I think. Everybody's just tired of it.
Yeah, and now that's her last paycheck she's ever going to get from any streaming service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And here's the thing with Netflix, too. You have to remember, Netflix isn't about ticket sales. Right. Netflix is about subscriber dollars. And you have to think, what is going to bring in more subscribers? Monique special or Amy Schumer special?
Exactly.
Amy Schumer doing movies where she's the star. I'm not sure. Has Monique starred in any movies? I know she's been in a ton.
Well, she's got an Academy Award.
Right.
I mean, but she's not in a ton anymore.
But she's not like starring.
It was a while ago, yeah.
Right, but she was. That was for...
Precious.
Precious.
Right, but it was supporting actress.
Based on the Neville Sapphire.
Supporting actress Academy Award, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, like, Amy Schumer
you
is...
Say that.
No, I'm saying, like, Amy Schumer is starring in movies.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Currently.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, you have the person who's currently starring in a movie, someone who's a great actress, who won an Academy Award, who's also a comedian, is doing a special. I wouldn't think that they would be that disparaging, but I think there would be definitely...
It would be a difference, I would think,
definitely.
For sure.
Yeah.
Of course.
Definitely. You know, you got to play who's hot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Business is business. I'm sorry to say that. But there's a lot of bullshit in business, too. And I don't give Monique, you know... I give Monique nothing but support in the fact that I think she's very talented. And I hope that her talent wins out. And, you know, I hope that whatever's going on, they all figure it out and work together. Because she's very good.
Yeah.
She really is. It's just crazy. I don't know. We went down a real rabbit hole on that.
We did. Well,
at least everyone in the hallway shut up.
And there's, you know.
Thank you for being quiet so you could listen to us ramble about Monique for 5 minutes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's an interesting, like it's four. An interesting discussion, and it's some of its broader issues that are sort of some of its broader philosophical things. Some of it's specific to, like, Monique.
Yeah.
You know. So it's it's an interesting.
Listen, that Academy Award, you know, should get you paychecks for the rest of your life.
You would think.
You should be getting paychecks on that. You know, you have one.
Unless you yell it at beloved national icon Steve Harvey.
Listen, I yell at Steve Harvey all day long. Steve Harvey drives me crazy. I love The Family Feud. Not so much these days.
Well, and here's a Steve Harvey's point or not, you know, here's a guy who's played the game and done very well. You know, he's played the game and done very well for himself. Is he someone that people look at and are like, oh my God, this is the genius of our time?
Well, he's just an affable guy. He's just a nice guy, and he's charismatic, and he's funny. But he's not, like, coming out writing brilliant jokes and, like, setting the world on fire. He's hosting talk shows and how many television shows did he have?
Which is in and unto itself, though.
It is, and I'm not hating. I'm just saying that the fact that all that guy does is TV now, I haven't seen him do a special in how long?
Yeah.
When was the last time Steve Harvey put out a stand-up special?
92?
Probably. The Kings of Comedy?
Yeah.
Is that
Kings
mid-90s, late 90s, 2000 maybe?
Early 2000s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. I could be very, very wrong. But I'm on Team Monique over Steve Harvey.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there are points to be made. I'm a little more Team Monique myself, but
yeah. All right, what else we got?
Just because I think she needs the money more than he does. Okay, so to wrap it up on a positive note,
we never do this.
We're just gonna end. the Grammy Awards. We had talked about the nominees, I think a month or two back, but there were some big comedy related winners. Of course, Dave Chappelle. One, you guys probably heard about this. The second year in a row, this year for Equanimity and the Bird Revelation album.
That was a good special.
Yeah, absolutely. So he won Best Comedy Album. He won last year, of course, as well. He beat out Patton Oswalt, Jim Gaffigan, Fred Armisen, and Chris Rock. So that's not a bad company to be in. Weird Al Yankovic took home his fifth Grammy Award for his for Best Box Set, which was like a giant. He put out like a huge
there's a Grammy for best box set.
Yeah, it's best box set or
and
limited
Weird
edition
Al Yankovic
package.
Won it.
Yeah. Yeah, so this was a
I gotta be honest, I would have thought Weird Al had more Grammys than that.
Yeah,
I really would have, because like what he puts out is so specialized.
Yeah, the like, comedy music category. Yeah, like, who else would be winning that?
I think he'd be winning it like every time he puts out an album.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
He's the only one.
The Academy Award for Eat It.
No, so this
Grammy,
one is for this award is for like not for packaging, but it's sort of like
the whole package
of the thing. Yeah. So this was a giant like LP career type thing. So anyway,
congrats, Weird Al.
Weird Al will come to your house and deliver it personally.
Childish Gambino, aka Donald Glover, didn't win for comedy, but he won Album of the Year and Song of the Year for
This
America.
I'll tell you what,
so
if Amy Schumer gets paid more than Donnell for a comedy special, then we got a problem.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So that was the Tiffany Haddish, sadly, was nominated but failed to take home a win for Best Spoken Word Album. She lost to Jimmy Carter for his album Faith, A Journey for All. So.
Jimmy
also,
Carter.
I mean, if you're going to lose to somebody, you might as well lose to Jimmy Carter.
I love Jimmy Carter. There's lots of hammering in the background.
Yeah.
Because he's just always like, building houses. He never
just
stops.
Just talking. I'm going to read my book.
Rosalind.
Is Rosalind still kicking?
Yeah, yeah.
Please
good for them.
Hand me that 2x4.
Rosalind, give me that square. I don't know. Right, yeah. What are people using construction? I have no idea.
Yeah, this has been a show. Thanks for tuning in to the Carlson Cast this week. We will see you next week. I'm pretty sure we're going to see you next week. There's a good chance we might end up being off, but we'll find out. If we are, we'll come up with something really good to do when we get back. Later, Marks.